program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Kogal, reading from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Modern Maturity. Today is Wednesday, March 11th. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from, the Life and Art section of what? Of the Wall Street Journal. And a couple of little articles from the AARP magazine. So, anyway, we're going to start right off with the Wall Street Journal article from Your Health. Linking diet, exercise, and Alzheimer's. In his 40s and a self-described fitness nut, Stephen Chambers doesn't seem like someone who would be worrying about Alzheimer's. But when his father was diagnosed with the disease about 5 years ago, he went to the Alzheimer's Prevention Clinic in New York to see what he could do. Though he had no noticeable memory issues, cognitive testing showed less than ideal levels in certain areas. His neurologist told him there were a number of lifestyle changes that might help his cognition and possibly reduce the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. Mr. Chambers, a 48-year-old physical therapist in Jersey City, New Jersey, modified his sleep, diet, and exercise routines. 18 months later, his performance on a battery of cognitive tests improved, particularly in areas like processing speed and executive function, such as decision-making and planning. I feel a certain sense of comfort in knowing that there are factors that I can control that can contribute to the decreased risk of me getting Alzheimer's, says Mr. Chambers. Mr. Chambers is among 154 patients in a study published online Wednesday in Alzheimer's and Dementia, the Journal of the Alzheimer's Association, that doctors say shows encouraging results. Among healthy patients, people who made changes in nutrition and exercise showed cognitive improvements on average. People who were already experiencing some memory problems also showed cognitive improvement if they followed at least 60% of the recommended changes. It's unclear whether the lifestyle changes can actually help prevent the development of Alzheimer's disease or simply improve cognition. This is a therapeutic approach that was shown to not only maintain but improve cognition in people with the earliest stages of Alzheimer's, says Richard Isaacson, a neurologist and first author on the study. While researchers struggle to develop a drug to treat or cure Alzheimer's, some doctors are recommending lifestyle changes. Dr. Isaacson began developing personalized prevention plans for patients of all ages in 2013 when he started the Alzheimer's Prevention Clinic at Weill Cornell Medicine and New York Presbyterian, of which he is now director. Alzheimer's disease starts in the brain some 20 to 30 years before symptoms emerge, so intervening early through personalized medicine and lifestyle changes can make a difference, says Dr. Isaacson. For the study, Dr. Isaacson and co-researchers enrolled 154 patients who ranged in age from 25 to 86 in two groups. There was a small group of 35 patients with mild cognitive impairment, MCI, often a precursor to dementia, and a larger group of 119 patients who had no symptoms of memory loss, though some had less than ideal performance on cognitive tests. Based on a battery of blood, genetic, and cognitive tests, as well as measurements of their body fat and muscle mass, patients received a couple of dozen personalized recommendations, ranging from eating specific types of fish and berries to taking certain vitamins and tailored exercise plans. 18 months later, They took a series of very sensitive cognitive tests, which may detect cognitive decline before memory problems outwardly appear, says Dr. Isaacson. The majority of both groups of patients showed statistically significant improvements when compared with their baseline, as well as compared with historical control groups. Most surprising, says Dr. Isaacson, is that the MCI patients who followed at least 60% of their recommendations showed cognitive improvement. However, MCI patients who followed less than 60% of the recommendations experienced cognitive declines, similar to the control groups, he notes. In the larger group of patients, everyone, including those who did not follow a large percentage of recommendations, performed better on the cognitive tests compared with their baseline and control groups 18 months later. On average, younger people showed more improvement on the cognitive tests compared with people over 60, says Dr. Isaacson. Patients in both groups had a family history of Alzheimer's disease. Researchers monitored cholesterol, blood pressure, and blood sugar levels because they are linked to an increased risk of Alzheimer's disease. So what was that again? They monitored cholesterol, blood pressure, and blood sugar levels. And the study tracked patients' body fat and muscle mass. Studies show the memory center of the brain, called the hippocampus, gets smaller as belly size gets larger, says Dr. Isaacson. Patients were assigned exercises based on their body metrics. Other recommendations included targeting stress reduction through activities like meditation and encouraging brain stimulation by learning a new instrument or foreign language. Marwan Sabah, director of the Cleveland Clinic Lou Ruvo Center for Brain Health in Las Vegas, says the results are promising. The people who had the targeted intervention and who were high in their adherence did very, very well over the span of 18 months, showing that these strategies work. And I think that's a very encouraging result, says Dr. Sabah of the study. That is where the trend is going. Ronald Peterson, director of the Mayo Clinic Alzheimer's Disease Research Center in Rochester, Minnesota, called the study encouraging, but cautioned that lifestyle changes aren't a magic bullet. Does that mean we're going to prevent Alzheimer's disease? He says, no. But measures that might help delay the onset are significant. If we can postpone the onset or slow the progression of cognitive impairment and Alzheimer's disease, that's very important, he says. Mr. Chambers says he now eats blueberries or strawberries, which are high in antioxidants, at least 2 to 3 times a week. He eats more of certain kinds of fish to get more omega-3 fatty acids, which can decrease inflammation and improve cardiovascular and brain health. And he adds powdered cocoa flavanols to his morning coffee because studies show they can combat insulin resistance and promote cognitive function. So those are cocoa flavanols. He also listens to more music, particularly classical music, and tweaked his workouts to include more high-intensity interval training. The biggest change, he says, was a concerted effort to get more and better sleep by meditating and cutting back on screens before bedtime. I took a lot of steps to really try to be consistent and to prioritize sleeping more and improve the quality of my sleep, he says. Once that changed, we really started to see improvements in all areas. He is no longer pre-diabetic, and his blood pressure and cholesterol levels have improved. Diana Gabriel, A 74-year-old artist and fashionista in Manhattan says 5 years ago she couldn't remember what restaurant she went to the night before. After hearing Dr. Isaacson speak, she went to see him at his clinic. Within a year, she says she noticed major improvements in her memory, improvements which were validated through cognitive tests. Changes she has made, she says, include intermittent fasting or not eating for 12 hours overnight. So if you have dinner, let's say, at 6 p.m., you don't have anything more until, let's say, if you finish dinner at 7, until 7 the following morning, which is linked, so you're not eating for 12 hours overnight, which is linked to lower insulin resistance. She cut out most carbohydrates from her diet and also eats wild fish. She started taking about 8 different types of vitamins and supplements, and she does weightlifting twice a week with a personal trainer to gain muscle mass. It's working, she says. I'm getting biceps. I can tell you, yesterday I went for training, and then I went to a jewelry shop, workshop, and I went for wine with my friend, and we met an interesting guy at the bar with a Newport Jazz Festival, she says. I remember yesterday. For a year or almost two, I could not. My memory is not perfect, but this has really given me a new lease on life. All right, and here are some bullet points. Brain boosters. Some changes that Dr. Isaacson says might help improve cognition depending on body type and medical profile. Consult a doctor first. Okay, here we go. Eat a half cup of blueberries and strawberries 2 to 3 times a week. Eat 2 to 3 servings per week of wild fish, which are high in omega-3 fatty acids. Add powdered cocoa flavanols to coffee, smoothies, or skim milk. Practice good sleep hygiene. Sleep at least 7.5 hours a day. Avoid caffeine drinks after 1 p.m. Go to bed and wake up at the same time every day. And avoid electronics, texting, and email 30 to 45 minutes before bed. Exercise at least 3 times a week with a mix of aerobic and resistance weight training. Have 1 tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil daily. Cut back on sugar and carbohydrates and look for whole grains and foods with high amounts of fiber. Play a musical instrument. Learn something new, such as a foreign language. And that is linking diet, exercise, and Alzheimer's. Great. Which one of those are you going to do? All of them? I hope so. I'm definitely going to have the strawberries and blueberries, that's for sure. Okay, well, along those lines, from the AARP, here is an article on a cheap, healthy main dish, pilaf. Cookbook author Naomi Duguid updates an ancient recipe. On this side of the Atlantic, we usually eat wheat in the form of flour in breads, cakes, and cookies. But when I was traveling in Armenia several years ago, I discovered delicious and creative ways of preparing wheat as a whole grain. It is cooked like rice and is the best kind of comfort food. In Armenia, an ancient variety of wheat called emmer, that's E-M-M-E-R, is used for these dishes. But I discovered that emmer is not always easy to find in grocery stores here. On the other hand, wheat berries, labeled farro, F-A-R-R-O, are widely available and a great substitute. Farro has become popular lately for its healthy fiber and antioxidants. Now that I have farro in my pantry, I find myself turning to it often. Why am I so drawn to it? Maybe because it's a reminder of the role of grain in the growth of human civilization. Wheat berries are hard. Boiling them would have been an early way to unlock the potential of the wheat. And so when I cook whole berries, I am warmed by the connection to our deep past and grateful for the ingenuity of our ancestors. And Naomi Duguid is 69 years old, and she is the author of Taste of Persia, a cookbook based on her travels in Iran, Kurdistan, and the Caucasus. This pilaf recipe has been adapted from the book. Okay, get your paper and pencils ready, because I'm going to give you this recipe. It sounds delicious. All right, mushroom pilaf with farro. And remember, that's F-A-R-R-O. Ingredients. 1 tablespoon sunflower or olive oil. 3 tablespoons butter. 2 medium onions cut in half and thinly sliced. 1 pound portobello or button mushrooms chopped. 2 teaspoons dried thyme. 1 1/4 cups emmer wheat berries or farro. So that's wheat berries or farro washed and drained. 2 1/2 cups water. 2 teaspoons sea salt. Black pepper. 3 tablespoons chopped fresh mint or tarragon. Okay, here's the procedure. 1. Place wide, heavy pot over medium heat. Add oil and butter. When butter melts, swirl to coat bottom of pan. Toss in onions and cook until translucent, about 5 minutes. Use spatula to break up any clumps. Add mushrooms and thyme and cook, stirring occasionally, until mushrooms soften, about 5 minutes. Add grain and stir. Then add water and bring to a boil. Add salt, bring back to a boil, and cook for 3 to 4 minutes. 2. Cover pan, lower heat, and simmer for 30 minutes or until grains are tender, yet still chewy, and cooked through. Timing will vary from 25 minutes if grains are pearled to 45 minutes if they are not. The finished dish should be a little soupy. 3. Taste, adjusting salt if necessary, and add generous grinds of pepper. Stir in fresh herbs. Serve hot or warm with yogurt on the side. This pilaf goes well with a salad or cooked vegetables and aged cheese. And the nutrients per serving, 343 calories, 11 grams of protein, 50 grams carbohydrates, 10 grams fiber, 13 grams fat, 23 milligrams cholesterol, and 1,240 milligrams sodium. All right, in our next article from the AARP, it's actually February-March edition. Escaping the clutter trap, Beverly Willett clung to her stuff for protection. Then she learned the key to protecting herself. The real estate appraiser ordered by the divorce court was very thorough. As I walked her through our Brooklyn brownstone, I periodically wiped away tears. "I'm sorry," I said. "Don't worry," she responded. "You'll get the house." 6 years later, I did get the house. I tried to save my marriage. When that failed, I fought like hell for our 4-story house. With so much change, I thought, my 2 daughters and I need some stability. I refinanced and turned the ground floor into a rental, but the upkeep on the house was more than I could handle on 1 income. After a few years of struggle, I admitted to myself the house would have to go. By that point, I was 57 years old, and my older daughter had moved out. My goal was to sell the place and move by the time my baby went off to college, about 8 months in the future. I'd need that much time to clean out the place. The house was jammed with stuff. My stuff, my kid's stuff, my ex-husband's stuff, his parents' stuff. And then there were the papers, tax returns, insurance policies, medical receipts, and box upon box of divorce documents. Once I'd organized and guarded these papers carefully, as if they had the power to protect me from fears of losing my children or my home. Now, as I plowed through file boxes, deciding what to keep and what to shred, I felt those old anxieties, but also a new sort of pride. In every alphabetical, chronological box, I saw the meticulous woman who had assembled those papers. Then, too, I felt sorry for her, surrounded by the false security of papers that couldn't save her. One day, my eldest stopped by to help clear out her room. When we came to her speech and debate trophies, she chose one for safekeeping and told me to toss the rest. I protested, but she was firm. "Please, Mom, I'm an adult," she said. "Throw them out." I couldn't do it. Cleaning out the house was a full-time job and a grueling one. The pain in my back became excruciating, and the precious objects I had curated for so long began to seem ever so slightly less precious. One day, I passed my older daughter's room, grabbed a black hefty bag, and filled it with trophies. Outside, I heaved it into the garbage bin. And I swear, as I did this, weight left my body, and a lightness entered my mind. I'd been keeping the trophies as a way to hold on to the past. But had any of this stuff really protected me? Or had it merely kept me from dealing with my losses? Change was inevitable. All the stuff in the world couldn't stop that. After tossing the trophies, I marched inside to the kitchen and opened drawers and cabinets. Why did I own 6 bottle openers? All this stuff used to give me comfort. Now it just felt sticky. I held stoop sails and gave things away. Parting with things freed me. Finally, I could process my pain and move beyond. I began to ask myself questions I'd been afraid to ask, like, how little can I live with? For the first time I could remember, I felt excited for my future. One night shortly before the house sold, as I was reading in bed, I remembered the 77 text messages I had kept on my phone from a guy I'd stopped dating 2 years earlier. Sweet messages that made me feel good about myself from someone who just wasn't a match. I wondered, why had I kept them? Why gauge my own worth through someone else's eyes? I grabbed my cell phone, found those messages, and hit delete all. former attorney Beverly Willett, who is 63, lives in Savannah, Georgia. This essay is adapted from her new memoir, Disassembly Required. And finally, because it is tax season, AARP Foundation Tax Aid, an army of volunteers to help you file. For more than half a century, AARP volunteers have helped tens of millions of low and moderate income Americans file their taxes free of charge. More than 35,000 trained, eager volunteers will take up the challenge again this year, beginning in early February, at nearly 5,000 sites across the country. This force will include people who have many years of experience helping others deal with the aggravation of tax season. And here are just a couple of stories. Gary Jurovich, 73, Rockland, California, 11-year volunteer. About 4 years ago, a new client who had recently been divorced had three children living with her came to us for help. I was able to prepare her federal and state returns and get approximately $7,000 in refunds. She was overcome with emotion. Eugene Varela, 70, from Santa Fe, New Mexico, 3-year volunteer. I enjoy meeting and helping people from the community and surrounding areas. I worked with an older deaf couple who always find it a challenge to get their taxes done. They were extremely grateful for the help. And Barbara Wimbush, 67, from La Plata, Maryland. She's an 8-year volunteer. The smiles you get from clients and the needed hugs you give a widow or widower let you know you're doing the right thing. We laugh and cry together. The AARP Foundation Tax Aid began in 1968 and has grown steadily. Since its inception, over 68 million people have been helped. All right, and to find a tax aid location near you, visit AARPFoundation.org/taxhelp or call 888-227-7669. That's 888-227-7669. And for 2019 at a glance, 1.6 million returns filed. 2,517,523 people helped. And $1.4 billion in refunds. Pretty good. And here's another person, Lori Gannon, 68, from Gaylord, Michigan. She's a 7-year volunteer. I did my mother's taxes, and when I moved farther away, she tried to do them herself and was simply overwhelmed. I'm glad to be able to ease that stress for others. And finally, John Wood, 72, from Falmouth, Massachusetts. He's a 15-year volunteer. On my first day working with the program, my second client was a woman with three teenage children. The next week, she brought back all three children. Not only did I do their returns, I also had a chance to talk with them about education tax credits, and maybe it would not be as hard as they thought to put together money for college. I was hooked. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anika Gall, reading for the NC Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Make it a great week, and I look forward to talking with you next week. Take care and be healthy.